Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to Pirate Money Radio, and I have a special guest today. We've got Bill Federer in the studio. Bill, you probably know from the American Minute or from many, like two dozen books he's written. He talks about history. He applies it to today and how we can learn from it. It's brilliant, brilliant work. Bill, welcome to Pirate Money Radio.
Kevin, great to be with you.
Oh, it's just an honor. I saw you at the Liberty Pastors Conference not long ago. We both were speaking there. I think it was Milwaukee. And I said, hey, can you come and visit us in Texas? And you did. You flew in through some storms, but you got here. It's glad to have you here.
Well, thrilled to be here. This is amazing what you have going on here.
Yeah, no, we're excited. Pirate Money Radio welcomes Bill Federer. And we're talking today about history and the history of money in particular. And Bill, you've taught me a lot about this.
Well, it's interesting. It used to be weights. And so you had beca and shekels and talents. And they were units of weight, and you would have a scale, and you'd put some gold on one side, and you'd put a number of shekels on the other. And like when they went to Delilah, and they wanted to give her 1,000, you know, shekels of gold so that she could betray Samson. But it was a weight thing, and it wasn't until 6th century BC that Croesus, king of Lydia, which was a Greek area, put his face on a coin, and it was a mix between silver and lead. It was called electrum, and that was the first coin. And King Croesus of Lydia is sort of where you get the Midas stories. Everything he touched turned to gold. He was extremely wealthy, so wealthy that Persia decided to conquer Lydia, and then the Persians went in. And Alexander the Great, his dad, Philip of Macedon, conquered a gold mine in Amphipolis in Greece and used some of that money to bribe citizens of Athens to betray their own city.
Wow.
So you have sort of
that's sort of what's going on now. We've got the Congress and the government bribing citizens.
Yeah, you got China coming in and bribing people.
Yeah.
And then you had the Greek drachma, but the Roman denarius. And then they started clipping the edges of the coins,
right?
And that's where you get a quarter and a dime with the little ridges around the edges.
Yeah.
The reason there's ridges around the edges is because if somebody clipped the edge of it, you could tell.
That's why the Spanish milled dollar was so important, because it was milled. It was made on a machine with the edges around it, as opposed to just a hammered out weight of silver.
Yeah, and now gold is a little bit malleable, and so you see those old movies where they bite a piece of Spanish, you know, doubloon or piece of gold, that if their teeth could make an impression in it, they knew it was real. And then they would mix in fake metals or lead, things like that would devalue the coins.
Base metals,
until pretty soon they were just a token. And then when the Roman Diocletian had debased it so much, and
adding the lesser metals,
and the country got in so much debt, he did price controls. He froze wages. So Diocletian was trying all these things, but he tied people to their land. So before, people would just leave their land, they couldn't pay their debt, and they'd go off and live with the barbarians. He said, no, you can't leave if you've got a debt. You're permanent, sort of like in India, where they have generational indebtedness, and the debt is just passed from family to family. Well, that's what Diocletian put into place, and it turned into the feudal system in the Middle Ages, where you had people tied to their land. And
sell your soul to the company store kind of thing, to where your employer, you're completely dependent on them, but then the only good your money is for employer-owned goods and services.
Right, and the Chicago Pullman Railroad Car Company, where they paid people in company script, and then they had the company store. But it's interesting, debt. And debt always precedes the collapse of a civilization.
Well, that and the debasing of the currency, because I looked at the average civilization lives about 250 years. That's Toynbee, I think, is the historian that showed us that. And that was about 250 years from the denarius, the silver denarius in Rome, when it was 98% silver to where it was less than 2% silver. It took about 250 years. So that was the debt. But you mentioned this about weight. I want to talk about that just for a second, because doesn't the Bible talk about how God sees dishonest weights and measures as an abomination? He's talking about money there, isn't he?
Yeah, that it is a sin to have two different scales, one for yourself and then one for the other, a lighter and a heavier. And God, the currency is supposed to be a reliable medium of exchange, not something that can go up and down depending on whatever politicians in their printing. But Roger Sherman was the one that was the founding father that insisted on having coins versus paper currency. I mean, James Madison said, paper money is unjust. It is unconstitutional. George Washington told Jefferson, paper money has had the effect in your state that it will ever have to ruin commerce, oppress. And Jefferson said, paper money is poverty. It's only ghost money. And but it's an interesting fact. Debt is fat to the body politic. Debt is fat to the body politic. So what's fat? Well, you eat something you shouldn't, you splurged. But then you got to carry it around. It doesn't add anything. It's not brain tissue. It's not muscle tissue. It doesn't do anything, but you got to carry it around, pay interest on it, right?
You got to keep it. And it weighs you down.
And so to a body politic, a nation, debt is where you splurge and spent money you shouldn't, but you got to pay interest on it. And it just keeps accumulating.
Well, we're now $35 trillion in debt. The interest this year, according to Economist Magazine, if interest rates don't go down over the next 12 months, we will pay $1.6 trillion in interest only, which is more than half of all the personal income taxes that can or will be collected over the next year.
Yeah, anyone that can connect the dots sees where this is headed. You know, Marco Polo in the 1200s went over to China and he met Kublai Khan, the grandson of Genghis Khan. And Kublai Khan was basically the first emperor to invent paper money.
Which is 100% debased. There's no metal in it whatsoever.
Right. And so since his dynasty was the Yuan dynasty, this paper money was called the Yuan. Mm. And that's still the name for the Chinese currency today, right? And so it was only used because the emperor ordered everyone to use it. And Marco Polo was amazed that you could buy all this stuff with a piece of paper.
Yeah.
He was also amazed that the Chinese invented a wheelbarrow and a compass and a piñata, and that they had gunpowder and paper from tree pulp rather than from papyrus reeds. But he was fascinated with how they could buy stuff with a piece of paper. And he saw how he was printing too much of it, and the people were becoming hesitant to want to take it. And when he saw Kublai Khan dying, he said, "Can I please go back to Venice?" And they let him go. And by the time he got back, Kublai Khan had died, and his Yuan dynasty had collapsed. But this debt precedes the collapse of a civilization. The Han dynasty, it first had enormous debt. The Roman Empire, it had expanded, but then Hadrian built his great wall. They were living off of conquered peoples, and they had this extra money. But once they said this far and no further, then they tried to keep living at the same level, and they got in debt. The Byzantine Empire got in debt. The Spanish Habsburg dynasty. I mean, as long as they were getting gold from the Inca Peru, but they were spending it as fast as they got it. And the Ottoman Empire, right before it fell, it was in debt. And then the French Empire, British Empire, we cratered the Soviet Union by debt. It was Ronald Reagan and the Star Wars. He made them try to keep up with us, and they were not spending their money and their GDP. And then Zimbabwe and Venezuela. But we're doing to ourselves voluntarily what we did to the Soviet Union to collapse it.
Great civilizations are not murdered. They commit suicide. I recently covered that in an Economic War Room episode. And I'll tell you what. All of our money is a form of debt. Look at your $20 bill. It says Federal Reserve Note. A note is a form of debt, or a bill is a bill of credit. Forbidden in the Constitution, but we do it anyway under the Federal Reserve Act. We're talking with Bill Federer, the history of money. When we come back, I want to know, what money did our founders use if it wasn't paper money? We'll ask Bill right after the break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, it's Pirate Money Radio. Happy Saturday. We're with the great historian Bill Federer, who also was a congressional candidate that literally changed the direction. Just by being a candidate, I think it was one of the most expensive races in Congress history. Tell us a little about your run for Congress.
Well, it was in 98 and 2000 against Richard Gephardt. So he was the Nancy Pelosi before Nancy Pelosi. And he was the House Minority Leader and was responsible to take money and spread it to other candidates to help them win back Congress. But instead, he had to spend it all against me. So combined, about $9 million he spent against me, which I guess is sort of a badge and honor to have somebody spend $9 million trying to destroy you. But we had the president's uncle co-chaired my finance committee, Bucky Bush. We had Ted Nugent during commercials, Chuck Norris, Pat Boone, Zig Ziglar, Art Linkletter, Alan Keyes, Judge Roy Moore, Phyllis Schlafly, James Dobson. I mean, it was a big splash. But on election day, we had people calling my office saying my name was accidentally left off the ballot in five wards in the city of St. Louis.
Wow.
People wanted to vote for me. My name wasn't even on the ballot. And then we had volunteers saying that their mother has Alzheimer's and is in the nursing home, but found out that she voted. And they go, well, she didn't even recognize me. Well, they had somebody help her.
She might have voted two or three times for that matter.
And then we were at our victory party and the phone rings. I pick up my cell phone and it's our volunteer at the Jefferson County Board of Elections saying they can't find the box of ballots from Guffey Elementary School, which was the largest precinct that I personally stood in front of for 8 hours. And I'm like, you're telling me they can't find them? That precinct was going to get us to win the county and we were going to win the... And then the electricity goes off when they're tabulating the votes. And when they reboot, we go from ahead to behind. This is like in the year 2000.
Wow.
That this is happening. And I hadn't heard from some of these friends in that long a time. And then when the 2020, they had the... Georgia, a water main broke, and they get out, all everybody out.
Nothing new under the sun.
They said, hey, this sounds like your race. And they're calling me. I haven't heard from them in years. And so this sounds just like your race.
But you made a difference because Dick Gephardt couldn't spend the money and spread it around like he wanted to. It pulled it in. You became the target, but you took a lot of the flack, which allowed other people to win. I think it was a truly patriotic act.
Yeah, my wife is not thrilled with the thought of me doing that again. So I decided to write books.
Yeah.
So I go around writing books and have written about going on 30 now and did books on the history of socialism. I did one on Franklin Roosevelt. I read through all of his addresses. He was in office for 12 years, got elected four times.
Yeah.
But he's passing out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms. And I'm like, gee, are they going to call Franklin Roosevelt a Christian nationalist? I mean, it's like, here he is pushing Christianity. And
I think it's fantastic. It reminds me of FDR Republican, not Franklin Delano Roosevelt, but Frederick Douglass Republican, FDR. When we can pull from history and show how far we've come, because Franklin Delano Roosevelt was considered far left in his day, and yet he would be a moderate Republican today, I think, by comparison.
Right. The left and the right have moved so far to the left that FDR would be on the right, respectively. Yeah. Again, he would say things like, the whole world's divided between pagan brutality and the Christian ideal. We choose human freedom, which is the Christian ideal. And he says, those forces hate democracy and Christianity as two phases of the same civilization. They oppose democracy because it's Christian. They oppose Christianity because it preaches democracy. And he says, unless we have the support of Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, he said, without those three, we can't win. And so it's like, okay, Judeo-Christian. I was amazed at the polling in 1965. 93% of Americans identified themselves as Christian.
Wow.
93%, 69% Protestant, 24% Catholic.
So far, it's crazy. As we think about that, and we've moved so far on our money, in 1971, our money was backed, Federal Reserve notes even, were backed 40% by gold under the Federal Reserve Act. And Nixon, with a stroke of a pen, removed the gold backing, and so that the gold window was closed and you couldn't go in and get money. But before the break, I was going to ask this question. When we had George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, they all hated paper money, as you've documented. What did they think was real money? What did they use?
Well, Spanish gold was the prime one. But we did have colonies that issued their own currencies. And even Ben Franklin said that was one of the main reasons that we rebelled against the British, was they took away our ability to print and coin our own money. That the taxes, Franklin said, the colonists would have happily paid the tea tax. It was them taking away our ability to make our own money that really got our colonists upset.
Unless you have the ability to have your own currency, you actually beholden. I think this is a lesson. I don't know if you've studied the Maccabees and the history of gelt, which is the coins that are given at Hanukkah to small children. They get chocolate coins. We were handing out, when we were bringing pirate money legislation to Texas and other states, we were handing out chocolate coins as an example to bring people aware, you know, gold coins and silver coins, but it had chocolate inside. And so Marnie, my wife, you know Marnie, was going around into every office and handing bags of chocolate coins. And people said, why are you doing that? And she said, well, just to make the point. So I researched the history of it, the history of gelt, because chocolate coins were created mostly for Hebrew children during Hanukkah. Well, why did they do that? Well, it's to commemorate the Maccabees, right? And how the oil stayed and how they overthrew their oppressors. So the first thing they did after they overthrew their oppressors was they minted their own coins, because they said, if we're beholden to Samaria or wherever for coinage, then we are still their slaves. And so we have to create our own coins. They used to give real gold and silver coins to children at Hanukkah, but they realized that's quite a bit more expensive. So they started producing chocolate coins, which is the history of gelt.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And they did for a century and a half. Israel was its own nation. So after the Maccabees threw out the Greek Syrians, they were their own nation, and they printed their coins. And right. You can go through all these different eras. They actually had a woman queen that ran, can't remember her name offhand, but Israel was like, Judah was tremendously prosperous under her. But then the Sadducees and Pharisees started fighting. The Pharisees came from Ezra, the teacher of the law, when they came back out of Babylon, and they worshiped God the closest to the way God wanted to be worshiped, but they would add on extra traditions. The Sadducees, they wanted to kiss up to the Greek rulers, and which was a lot of the humanism and the naked statues and all that. And so the Sadducees were like secular Jews that didn't believe in resurrection miracles, prophecies. And so they actually had a civil war. And war was so bad, they were killing each other. And Pompey, the Roman general, was up in Cappadocia fighting in Armenia. And they bring him word, hey, there's a civil war going on in Judah. And so Pompey says, oh, great time to invade. So he goes down, takes advantage of it, sides with the Pharisees against the Sadducees. And he goes into the temple and sees it and turns around, tells his soldiers, don't touch this place. But from that point on, Judah was a Roman colony, Roman province. So this internal division. So that actually turned into a concept called critical race theory, where if you want to conquer a country, you first get it to fight itself on the inside to weaken it. The British did this. That's how they took over India. In 1714, they opened a trading post that turned into a trading fort that turned into them having guns, and they would give guns to one kingdom and guns to another kingdom, and then they would stir up animosity between the kingdoms, and when they'd fight and weaken each other, the British would conquer both kingdoms. They did this again and again and again until they took over all of India. They did it in Uganda with the 56 different tribes. They did it in Nigeria, and they tried doing it in America, where the Americans and the Indians had reached an equilibrium, and they would go to the Indians and stir them up and promise them money for scalps. Mm. And so they would scalp. And so that's one of the reasons listed in the Declaration why we rebelled, is because the king has incited the merciless savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of men, women, and children. And so so this idea of going into a country get people to identify with subgroups and pit them against each other, we now call it critical race theory. And they've been doing it in America, trying to get us to not identify as Americans, but identify with these subgroups. And then they want to pit these subgroups against each other. The goal is to weaken the country so it can be conquered.
Well, that happened. In fact, Lincoln said it, quoting Jesus, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." It's happened throughout history. That's how you subjugate people, is that you keep them fighting. It's in unrestricted warfare, a doctrine of the Chinese. But this critical theory failed in America on the notion of critical economic theory. So the haves versus the have-nots, because we had upward mobility. And yes, as long as you have upward mobility, I can enter the elite class. I have that opportunity. Elon Musk talked about this. You know, you mentioned earlier about how far to the left that we've moved. Elon Musk said, "I've stood exactly where I was, and now I'm considered a right winger because I didn't move." But now we, you know, Elon Musk can come from nothing and become very wealthy. And so there's upward mobility. Now they're working on this, what you said, critical race theory, trying to divide us by our ethnic background, by our the color of our skin, by the part of the nation that we were.
Well, and now it's sexual. And so they want to the trans is like the ultimate one of splitting the country into different subgroups. That they call intersectionality, as many minority subgroups that you can belong to, your worth goes up. Whereas originally it was you're worth something because you're made in the image of the creator.
So the lowest on this whole scale is a biological man that is attracted to women. But that's also the top if the biological male claims that he's a lesbian and he's attracted to women. It's kind of confusing.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with Mike Carter that how they push this intersectionality in the schools, and it's a like a triangle, and it's social emotional learning, where the top of the triangle are the cisgendered, and they're the ones who believe that there is such a thing as a male and a female. They're the cisgendered. They're at the top of the pyramid. They're the oppressors. Everybody else down the pyramid, the bisexual, transsexual, asexual, pansexual, they're being oppressed by the oppressors. And so they go into the classroom and they tell the kids, "Which one are you?" Well, none of them are going to pick the oppressor, the cisgender. They all pick. They've had a 5,000% increase in trans-identifying students in the last 3 years.
Well, no wonder they say, "We're going to celebrate you. We'll give a party for you. You get to wear these beautiful rainbow colors. And we're going to really enjoy being that," where the kids have no idea what that means. I mean, if we were celebrating baby dinosaurs, I think half the kids in the kindergarten would be a baby dinosaur.
Yeah. And if they would say, "Okay, everybody that has a right eye is an oppressor. Throughout history, every oppressor's had a right eye." And if the teachers started wearing patches over their eyes and started having cartoons with patches over their eyes, you'd have kids wanting to get their right eye taken out. I mean, this psyops, this a twisting of their desire to be accepted is now it's destroying the country.
Well, you know, Bill Federer said this, and thank you for being here. We'll come back after a break. But if you cause a little one to stumble, you ought to tie a millstone around your neck and throw yourself into the sea. We'll be right back after this break with more with Bill Federer and Critical Theory.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, we're talking with Bill Federer this morning. Hey, and if you've got questions for Pirate Money Radio, you can send your questions to us by email at afr@piratemoneyradio.com. What we were talking about with Bill, we talked about money and how unjust weights and measures. And then we started talking about critical theory and how the education system, and it's for profit, for money. A lot of people are making money out of convincing children that they are not cisgender, but they're different genders, and they should get transgender surgeries and things like that, which are very profitable, not good for the kids, but very profitable. And we're convincing them. And yet the church, unfortunately, seems to be going along with this critical theory, mostly by being quiet and not standing up. You know, if you say something, "Oh, you're transphobic, you're homophobic, you're this." Hey, biblical truth and speaking biblical truth is not hate speech. It's actually acknowledging Creator and exercising your free speech rights and your free exercise rights that are guaranteed in the Constitution. What say you, Bill?
Well, you're hitting it right on the head with my new book, Silence Equals Consent, The Sin of Omission, Speak Now or Forever Lose Your Freedom. And I go through throughout world history, the most common form are governments kings, and they keep getting bigger because with the latest military advancements, kings can kill more people. And where did the idea come from of people ruling themselves without a king? Well, it started with the Reformation and the covenant form of government, and that they got from the Bible. What part of the Bible that first 400 years out of Egypt before King Saul? And so it's called the Hebrew Republic, and so that's why they taught Hebrew at Yale and Harvard. And so in New England, you would have pastors and churches founding cities. A pastor, John Lothrop, and his church founded Barnstable, Massachusetts, and a pastor, Roger Williams, and his church founded Providence, Rhode Island, and a pastor, Thomas Hooker, and his church founded Hartford, Connecticut. This was unique on the planet. Pastors and churches founding cities, and they would take their covenant form of church government and they would make it their civil government. And it turned into our Constitution. The word federal is Latin for covenant. We have a covenant form of government where we rule ourselves without a king, and they got their idea from ancient Israel, that first 400 years out of Egypt before King Saul.
Well, we're all citizens, right? And where does the word citizen come from? You showed it earlier.
Right. Citizen is Greek. It means co-ruler, co-sovereign, co-king. So kings have subjects who are subjected to their will, and democracies and republics have citizens. So Romans 13, for those not familiar, it says, let everyone be subject to the governing authority, for there's no authority except that which God has established. The authority that exists have been established by God. It's like Romans 13 is understood differently in a monarchy versus a republic. In a monarchy, subjects submit to the king. In a republic, the citizens are the king, right? Subjects obey, citizens give consent. And so it would be silly for a citizen, for a king, to have to submit to his janitor, right? I mean, in America, the politicians are your servants. You hire them, you fire, you tell them what needs to be done.
Right, and we kick them out if they don't do what we think.
And so the people that say, oh, you got to submit to the government, it's like, you need to pick up and go over and live in China. Just surrender your will to the government. Just be a bunch of mush. When Nebuchadnezzar blows his trumpet, you bow. No, we're like, no, in America, we are the citizens. We draw our history from the pre-King Saul period of the Bible. And they wanted, the kings of Europe would draw their foundation from the King Saul and on part of the Bible.
But didn't God warn us against kings? Didn't God say that's not his best, but he gave to the people that wasn't what he intended for Israel?
Right. So when they go to Samuel and they say the self-government system's not working, we want to be like the other countries, we want a king. Samuel cried and the Lord tells him, they did not reject you, they rejected me. And God sent a storm, destroyed their crops. The people said, we sinned in asking for a king. He said, yes, you did sin, but I'll still work my plan of redemption, right? With a king. But the founders of America, after the Reformation in 1517, you had a century of people studying this Hebrew Republic, and they were called Christian Hebraists. James Harrington, John Sadler, whose sister Ann Sadler married John Harvard. And so these Christian Hebraists were studying the Israelites, this pattern. So ancient Israel, before King Saul, was the first nation with private land ownership. Wherever there's a king, you never really own the land. It's always conditional, you staying on the nice side of the king. Well, in ancient Israel, there was no king. The land was permanently titled to each family. If you own land, you can accumulate stuff. The Bible called that being blessed. Karl Marx called to being a capitalist. Karl Marx says, the theory of communism may be summed up in a single sentence, abolition of private property.
Wow.
Or as Klaus Schwab put it, you'll own nothing and be happy.
You know, I think about Klaus Schwab a bit because the Declaration and the Constitution, life, liberty, property, or life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, almost interchangeable between property and pursuit of happiness. World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, what he's trying to say there is you'll be happy without property. In other words, he's trying to break the compact of individualism that we had at our founding and say, no, no, you don't have a right to property, but you have a right to be happy. Well, the founders had life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, or life, liberty, property. They said they're directly connected, and Klaus Schwab is trying to break that connection.
Right. He wants to have it peopled. So the Great Reset is a orchestrated global crisis to get everybody to panic and fear and surrender their freedoms to a global government. Right. But ancient Israel, they were the first nation that could read. I thought this was fascinating. Ancient Egypt had 3,000 hieroglyphs. Only 1% of Egypt could read. Reading and writing was the scribe's secret knowledge. They actually kept the hieroglyphs complicated on purpose as job security. Sumeria had 1,500 cuneiform characters. China had 10,000 characters. When Moses comes down the mountain, he had the law in a 22-character alphabet. First letter's Aleph, second letter Beth. Sound familiar? So easy to learn, kids could learn it. Ancient Israel was the first literate population. So now you had landowners, and you had a literate population, and they were the first nation where people were armed. Wherever there's a king, the king has an army. But in Israel, every man was in the militia and armed with a sword upon their thigh and ready at a moment's notice to defend their family.
I'm beginning to see a parallel here, because the early American experience was highly literate, much more literate than most other nations of the world. The early American experience, we were armed and we were property owners. This sounds very familiar.
And ancient Israel had no police. Everyone was taught the law. Everyone helped enforce the law. It was sort of like in traffic, somebody cuts you off. You take it upon yourself to honk the horn. Or a mom watching some neighborhood kids, she has no problem correcting somebody else's kid. In ancient Israel, everybody was correcting everybody. Do you know the verse everyone knows, Leviticus 19:18, love your neighbor as yourself? The verse right before it says, confront your neighbor directly so you will not be held guilty for their sin.
Oh, and that goes to silence equals consent.
Right. That you don't just, oh, love him, love him, love him. You love him and you confront him. Another translation says, rebuke your neighbor directly so you'll not incur their guilt upon you. It says, better to hear the rebuke of the wise than the song of fools. It says, rebuke a wise man and he will love thee. New Testament, John 17:3, if your brother sin, rebuke him. You know, 1 Timothy, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke. Now you can do it nicely. It also says, rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father. What does entreat mean? It doesn't mean being silent. It means you speak up politely. But this idea of you just have to be quiet and affirm them. Oh, if your child wants to go through their transition, just love them, just love them. No, you're the adult. If you left children up to do whatever they feel, they'd eat candy all day long and their teeth would rot out of their head.
This sounds like the misunderstanding of the word tolerance. And I've heard you before talk about tolerance, how the Christians were the first with tolerance and then were not tolerant. Can you share that?
Right. So each colony was started by a different denomination. So the Reformation, Europe's Catholic, and then you have different countries with different religions. England was Anglican. Scotland was Presbyterian. Holland was Dutch Reformed. Northern Germany and Sweden were Lutheran. Switzerland, Calvinist. Scotland, Presbyterian. I said that right. Italy, Spain, France, Austria, Poland, Catholic. It was one denomination per country. If you didn't believe the way your king did, you were persecuted, and they spilled over and would migrate, and some of them came to America. And so every colony in America was started by a different Christian denomination. Virginia was Anglican. Massachusetts was Puritan. Rhode Island was Baptist. Maryland was Catholic. Connecticut and New Hampshire were Congregationalists. Delaware, New Jersey were originally Swedish Lutheran. Hmm. And New York, Dutch Reformed, and Pennsylvania, Quaker. And they did not get along. They'd tar and feather each other, sort of like what happened in Europe. But then the revolution started, and they all had to work together against the king. After the revolution, their attitude changed. We may not always agree with religion that we need each other, but you were willing to fight for my freedom. I need to let you practice your faith. And so we began to tolerate each other on a state level, and different states expanded religious freedom at their own speeds. I read through every state constitution. 9 of the original 13 state constitutions required officeholders to be Protestant. 3 allowed Catholics in, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New York. And but then there was a Irish potato famine. Millions of Irish Catholics come to America. They go from 1% to 20%. And then states change from requiring you to be a Protestant to just being Christian. And then there's a persecution of Jews in Bavaria, middle 1800s. And they come across about 250,000. And they go from 1/10% to 1%. But it was Christians learning how to tolerate each other. And then they tolerated first Protestants and then Catholics, and they tolerated Jews, and then they tolerated monotheists and finally went out to tolerate the atheists and the Islamists and the Satanists. And guess what? The last ones in the boat want to kick the first ones out. So everybody's tolerated in America except the Christians that founded the country.
But tolerance doesn't require silence, does it? You can tolerate someone, but that doesn't mean you have to keep quiet on moral issues.
Right. If you keep quiet in the face of evil, you participate in the evil. It's called being an accessory. So in the book, I go through a wedding ceremony. The pastor says, if anyone present knows of any reason why this couple shall not be joined together in holy matrimony, speak now or forever hold your peace. If you're holding your peace, you're actually giving consent. It's called the rule of tacit admission, T-A-C-I-T. And it's in real estate law. You have a piece of property, somebody's squatting on it, and you're not trying to charge them rent or evict them. They can gain title to your property through adverse possession just by you being silent. You design a trademark, somebody copies it, and if you don't try to defend it, they get to use your trademark. It's in our Constitution, Article 1, Section 7. Congress passes a bill, puts it on the president's desk. If any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, the same shall be a law in like manner as if he had signed it. His silence equals a signature. If they're killing babies in the community and you're silent, you're giving consent to killing babies. If they're mutilating children and you're silent, you're giving consent to mutilating children. So instead of you thinking, we're holy, we only preach the gospel in our church. Yeah, but you're being silent toward all the evil out there. You're giving your consent to it. You're inviting the judgment of God on your heads.
Well, if you're a shareholder of a corporation like Disney, and you're not voting your proxy to say, we want the corporation to run to be family friendly, you're giving your consent if you're not voting your proxy. This is Pirate Money Radio. This is all about how you can support liberty, security, and values with your investments and your life. We're talking with Bill Federer. We're going to wrap up with Bill talking further about silence equals consent.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, it's an honor to be with you on Saturday. We talk about money every week, but we really talk about the heart, and we talk about politics, and we talk about cultural issues and so many things. We're honored to have Bill Federer as a guest of Pirate Money Radio. But really, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, spend it, or invest it. And here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And we've got Bill, and we were talking about silence equals consent. You have some stories from the Bible. Share them with us.
Numbers 30. Now, to those that think that they're not going to get involved in politics, they're going to be more spiritual, they're going to say, we just preach the gospel at our church, we don't get involved in politics. We've reached this higher level of spirituality where we can literally not care about what kind of country we're leaving our kids because we're so spiritual, right? To those type of people, what do you do with Numbers chapter 30? It's the silence equals consent chapter of the Bible. Half a dozen scenarios. One, if a daughter binds herself with a vow while living in her father's house in her youth, and her father hears her vow and holds his peace, then all her vows shall stand. But if her father overrules her on the day that he hears, then none of her vows shall stand. The Lord will release her. That's come down to us as vows in a wedding ceremony. And the pastor tells the church members, if you're silent when you hear these vows, you're giving consent. Speak now or forever hold your peace. And so the Leviticus 20, any Israelite who sacrifices any of his children to Molech is to be put to death. If the members of the community close their eyes when that man sacrifices one of his children to Molech, I myself, the Lord, will set my face against him and his family and will cut them off from Israel. All you have to do is close your eyes while the other person kills the child and you are cut off. Last year in California, they had a bill to kill babies 28 days after birth. It's called the post-birth abortion. They actually had the bill, and enough pastors and church members, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, went to Sacramento and forced them to change the wording. They could not be silent.
28 days after birth. This sounds like Herod and trying to kill Jesus. This sounds like trying to kill Moses. 28 days after birth.
Yeah, I mean, it's organ harvesting heaven for these people. So Acts 22, the Apostle Paul's talking to the Lord, and he says, And when the blood of thy martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by consenting to his death. Paul did not throw a stone. Paul did not say a word, yet he knew he was guilty for the death of Stephen just by standing there silent. Proverbs 24 says, rescue those who are unjustly sentenced to death. Don't stand back and let them die. Don't try to disclaim responsibility by saying you didn't know about it. For God who knows all hearts knows yours, and he knows you knew and hold you accountable. Mordecai tells Esther, there's a mandate from the government to kill the Jews. If you remain silent, you and your family will be killed and God will raise up somebody else. Here's an interesting one. Numbers 20. Moses and Aaron are called to the door of the tabernacle. And the Lord spake and said, Moses, gather, take the rod, gather the assembly, thou and Aaron, speak to the rock and water will come out. Well, Moses gathers the assembly and with his hand, he lifts up the rock, smote the rock twice. Water came out abundantly. End of the chapter. And the Lord said, Aaron will not enter the land because both of you rebelled against my command at the waters of Meribah. It's like, both? We just read the chapter. Aaron didn't do anything. He didn't say anything. It's like, yeah, that's just it. He heard God tell Moses, speak to the rock. When Moses spoke to the rock, and or Moses lifted up his rod, rather, and he hit the rock the first time, it probably took Aaron by surprise. When Moses lifted up the rod the second time, Aaron knew what was coming, and he was silent. He didn't protest. And in that instant, Aaron was guilty. Moses's was a sin of commission. Aaron's was a sin of omission. Leviticus 5, a person sins because he did not speak up, even though he was an eyewitness to a case or knew what happened. Anyone who failed to testify is guilty. Martin Luther King Jr., he who accepts evil without protesting it is really cooperating with it. And so this idea of people saying, we're going to be spiritual, we're not going to be involved, by not being involved, by not speaking up, your silence, you're giving consent to all that wickedness, you're going to be judged.
Well, let me apply that to pirate money here for a second. If you go back, the nation under blessing and the nation under a curse, and you can see the distinct differences between them. A nation under blessing is one that lends to every nation and borrows from none. A nation under a curse is one that ends up borrowing from every nation. That's where America is today. We're borrowing from every nation. But it also is a nation where the alien who lives among you rises higher and higher. And we're watching those who are here illegally given special permission to travel on airplanes without IDs. We're giving them special phones. We're giving them
$10,000 on a debit card.
Yes, we're giving them stipends. And then if we're not speaking up about that, we're consenting to it. We're consenting to being a nation under a curse. God gave us a choice. He says, choose which one you'll want to be. If we're being silent about it, we're consenting to the curse, and we shouldn't consent to the curse. Also, unequal weights and measures. The Bible's very specific that you ought to have honest weights and measures, which is honest money, because you said measure was money in the first segment. So dishonest weights and measures, if we allow that and go along with it, we're getting bribed by our government. We'll give you so much money, Bill. We'll give every family so much money. And we're stealing from our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren with debt, which is like fat to the body politic, as you've explained. We're essentially consenting to the government bribing the people today with their children and children's children money. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children and his children's children. An evil one will leave debt to their children and children's children. And by not speaking up, we're consenting to it, aren't we?
Well, it is so important that people get this message. That's why I put together this book, Silence Equals Consent, The Sin of Omission. Speak now or forever lose your freedom. Some people say, you know, it's getting really bad and I'm just going to wait for Jesus to come back. And it's like, who do you think you're going to meet when you're raptured? Jesus? Does Jesus love the little children? Oh, yeah, he loves the little children. You think he might wonder why you didn't do anything to protect him?
Well, he gave a whole, what's your master going to do when he comes back? Is he going to find you working or is he going to find you sitting there? There are parable after parable where Jesus is warning people, I'm coming back and I want to see you working. It says in the parable of the talents, occupy until I return. That means literally do my business until I get back.
Yeah, I was with Lance Wallnau at a Courage Tour, and he was saying, occupy, it's only used once in the Bible in that particular form, and it means leverage your influence to have the maximum amount of impact, right? And so, you know, there's sex trafficking. Jim Caviezel did the movie Sound of Freedom, and a lot of that sex trafficking takes place in America. I was in Colorado, and speaking at a big Republican event, and the state rep named Scott Bottoms. He introduced a bill in the Colorado legislature for minimum punishment for those caught selling 1 to 5 year old children for sex.
Minimum punishment.
Just a minimum punishment for those caught selling 1 to 5 year olds for sex. Every Democrat voted against it. And the churches are silent. Oh, we don't want to get involved. They're selling children for sex. And the church, you're so spiritual that you don't care about that? I really think, you know, Salvation Army, how it started? William and Catherine Booth were upset at sex trafficking of children in London and the poor area. And Catherine Booth would, she said, I felt as though I must go and walk the streets and besiege the dens where these hellish iniquities are going on. To keep quiet seemed like being a traitor to humanity. And so here's this woman, Catherine Booth, going to these smoky dens of sin and confronting them. And it turned into the Salvation Army that we have today. Jesus said in the last days, because evil shall abound, the love of many will wax cold. I think these churches where they're just still focusing on themselves and not caring about these little innocent kids and not caring, I think their love is waxed cold.
No, they're pretending like they're loving the little kids, and they're loving the little kids into having their bodies mutilated and so forth. The whole argument was that I would rather have an alive son or an alive son than a dead daughter because they'll kill themselves. And yet all of the research is indicating that the people that are getting these sex mutilations and transgender operations, they're 12 times more likely to kill themselves than those who don't. This is all built on a lie, and we're sitting back knowing that the emperor has no clothes, and we're being silent. Only the little boy that pointed out the emperor was naked, you know, everybody else, well, I'm afraid. We've got to wake up. That's the whole point of silence equals consent, the sin of omission. We've got to speak now or forever lose our freedom.
Yeah, and 90% of children will go back to being boys and girls if you just leave them alone. And the trans agenda is the electric vehicle of the ideology. In other words, what's an electric vehicle? It's a government-forced thing. They're forcing all these car rental companies to buy the Ford, and people don't want to rent them. I don't want renting. I want to be able to just fill it up and drop it off and not sit at a recharge. People don't want it. But it's being forced, and the trans agenda is being forced. You know, Ezekiel was given a vision. He said, the Lord said, he cried, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near. Behold, six men came, every man with a destroying weapon in his hand. And he called to the man clothed with linen who had the writer's inkhorn at his side. And the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, put a mark on the foreheads of those who sigh and cry over the abominations that are done in that city. To the others, he said, go after him through the city, slay old and young, but do not come near anyone on whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. What's the difference between being slain and not? Does your heart sigh and cry over the abominations? Does it break your heart to see these little innocent kids be mutilated and lied to? These kids made in the image of God. Jesus said in Matthew 19, in the beginning, God made them male and female. They have a tactic. It's to guilt trip Christians into being more Christian than Christ. If you're really Christian, you'll be silent and give your tacit approval to these schools teaching something Jesus would never teach the kids.
Wow. This is straight from the pits of hell. It is convincing Americans that you got to be quiet, you got to be silent, you got to be tolerant, and tolerance requires silence, and it's not. They're two separate things. When I tolerate something, I put up with it, but I'm not quiet about it. I tolerate liberty for other people, religious and so forth. Look, Pirate Money Radio is about helping you. It's about money, but it's also about our society and the future of America. We've enjoyed having you here, Bill Federer, and we'll be back next week on Pirate Money Radio, and we'll be talking about liberty, security, and values, and how we can protect them for America and our children. God bless you all. Have a great week.